I have chills listening to that. That was Connie Lim, also known as Milk, with Power of the Heart, and she is standing by to join us right now. Good morning. Thanks so much for calling in.
Thanks for having me. Good morning.
You know, I've been following you for a while now. I told you I first met you at the She Rocks, and I didn't get a chance to talk to you, so this is so much better. I get more time with you.
Yeah. I get to go in and get deep.
So cool. So tell me about your new album that just came out. Congratulations, by the way.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me, first of all, and taking the time to learn about more about me and the new album. The new album is called Mother Tongue. It has 12 songs on there. And as I was creating it, I didn't quite know what I was doing, but what it was about. But as the album wrapped up, I realized that it was an ode to that hunger for belonging and home, and that journey that some of us take. Sometimes we mistaken people or external things or habits as a source of comfort and belonging and home.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of, my journey spit me back out and had me learn that home is within.
Yeah.
And that's been a really useful lesson to learn in this particular time, just because I think a lot of us are feeling like our home, our lands, they're changing and shifting, the societies around us, and we're not quite sure what our home is actually. And
so true.
And so the skill of finding our homes within can keep us steady as everything around us feels very uncertain.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Where do you live?
I live in Los Angeles right now. I spent a lot of time in Memphis and in Boulder past 5 years.
Okay.
And, yeah, I love both of those places. And so now I'm more settled in Los Angeles again.
Were you impacted by the fires?
I actually was indirectly. The week of the fires, I actually was in Burbank doing like a staycation. I was like, you know what? I'm gonna get a hotel and work and focus on this TV show I'm composing for. And the power went out during the windstorm, and I had to shelter with one of my friends. And
okay,
it was pretty surreal.
Yeah.
And yeah, you know, I think a lot of us have friends that have lost their homes.
Yes.
I'm actually currently staying over with my friend who lost her home. Right now we're it's a time of resilience and community. Like, we really need to be together.
You bet.
Because it's just on all fronts things are shifting.
Yes. So I want to back up a second. When you called in, you said, "Hi, this is Connie Lim," and I'm like, "Wait, are you Milk?" Like, so tell me where. Where did the name, you told me briefly, but tell the listeners, how did you come up with the name Milk?
Yeah, so my artist name is Milk, M-I-L-C-K, and it's my name, Connie Kimberly Lim, scrambled around. So Milk, M-I-L is my last name backwards, my last name's Lim, so I spelled L-I-M backwards, M-I-L.
Okay.
And then my first two initials are C-K,
yes.
Connie Kimberly. And it's interesting because in the Chinese tradition, as many people may or may not know, our last names come first because we do value our communities, our families, and then our first names come afterwards. So it would be like when we address each other, it's like Lim Connie in a way. And so it's kind of cool because my last name does come first in my artist name. And I like that it is also what we provide to the next generation to nourish the next generation. And I like that it's what a lot of mothers or parents provide. And so I always aim for that. And I just hope my music nourishes and helps to strengthen people as they're on their path of growing.
Yes. Well, let's back up to 2017. To the song Quiet. Let's talk about that. So when did that song come out, and what was your reflection on the impact? I mean, that was at the Women's March.
Exactly. Yeah, thanks for asking about that. So Quiet is a song that I wrote at the end of 2015 for my own story of being a survivor of domestic violence, mm-hmm. being a woman and being an Asian woman. There's so many intersections of my identity that made me feel like I needed to keep quiet in order to help everybody else feel more comfortable. And over time, as I started growing into my late 20s, I couldn't hold in that voice anymore. And it just erupted out in this song. And it's called Quiet. The lyrics of the chorus are like, I can't keep quiet, a one-woman riot. Because I felt that tension and that force and that power sitting within me felt like the force of an entire riot. And when I decided to create like a protest art piece out of that song, because the song wasn't even released yet, and I was like, you know what? There's this thing called the Women's March that I'm seeing this invitation for on Facebook, and none of us knew what it was going to be. None of us realized how grand and how magnificent that movement was going to be, with millions of people rising all over the globe. And that whole uprising had zero acts of violence. And it was a completely peaceful and revolutionary movement. I had brought my song to 25 strangers and asked them to harmonize with me. And we rehearsed over then Skype, which was, you know, because that was the dominant video chat series during that time. So I had already pre-rehearsed with 25 strangers on Skype, and we met up on the streets of D.C., and we started harmonizing and singing that song for random groups of people on the street, whoever would listen. And someone walks by, and that someone happens to be a really well-respected, award-winning Hollywood director, Alma Harrell. She walked by, filmed the video, and it went viral on her Twitter account. And I think it got like
8 million views. 8 million views in 2 days.
Yeah, over 2 days, 8 million views, and then, you know, just all the major publications started writing about the song, calling it an anti-Trump anthem. And for me personally, I viewed it as a pro-woman, pro-peace, pro-equality anthem. And so then I just surfed the waves and signed with Atlantic Records and did a journey of doing mainstream media for 4 years, and eventually realizing that I needed some time to reflect and to go back to my original processes, and I couldn't handle myself. I didn't want to handle the big pressure of a major label. So I ended up asking to leave, and they were amazing and graciously let me go. And yeah, it was a beautiful parting. And I think it was a lot of it was one, the label, the people that ran Atlantic at that time were true, true supporters of mine. And then also the pandemic. It was 2021, January of 2021 when I left, and everyone just had a bit more compassion and understanding. So the business terms in which they, in which we parted were just like unheard of. I can't say enough good things about how well I was treated leaving.
That's beautiful. I mean, you said Atlantic, right?
Yeah.
I mean, years ago when you were a kid, you probably would have been like, wow, you know, if I sign with Atlantic, and then here you are, parting ways amicably, you know, because it wasn't a fit for you.
Yes. It's so surreal, right? As a child, like, I wouldn't have even imagined that I could sign with Atlantic. I think, you know, there was a lot of doubt about an Asian American signing with a label, like, throughout my entire childhood. Mm. I was told I should go back to China. And I was like, and I was like, I my parents are from China. I'm not. And it feels too foreign to me. So, I was stubborn and wanted to stay, and I'm glad I stayed because times just shift beyond our imagination sometimes. That's what I hold that hope within me, is that things can shift for the better quickly, more quickly than we anticipate.
How old were you when you wanted to be a singer-songwriter?
I think I remember being 9 years old and hearing the question, what do you want to do when you grow up? Mm-hmm. And I remember answering one time that I wanted to be a singer, and I was quickly taught that that was not the right answer. The right answers were doctor, lawyer, And so I just thought that that was the way that life was. You have an internal desire, but you learn what others want and you just do that instead. And that's just life. You have mm-hmm. a thing that you compress internally. And so I think I knew that I had a love for my voice and my singing very young, but I didn't own that in real space and time until I was in college. I was studying at UC Berkeley, and I had a summer internship as an investment banker, and I did not like it.
What a shocker.
Yeah, what a shocker. I called my parents after the first week and said I was going to leave the internship and stay in Berkeley and write music. And it was, my parents were tearing their hair out. Like, what? But that's when I really realized, is like, my body is teaching me, because anytime I do pre-law, pre-business, I'm just wanting to sleep. Like, I'm falling asleep as I open these textbooks. But when I was in the recording studio, I'd be on hour 8. And I couldn't get enough. And so I really followed my body on this path.
Yeah, that's a great lesson.
Yes, yes. I wrote this short essay called That Traveling Heat. And I talk about the heat that travels throughout our body and how it teaches us what we're really feeling. And because I was culturally so indoctrinated on a certain path, my body learned. I'm grateful that I have a very loud physical internal system.
Yeah.
And forced me out of some of that indoctrination.
No, it's great. And what's so interesting is that, you know, some people would only dream of the life that you created and all these opportunities, Atlantic. But don't you feel that your life is, I don't want to use the term richer, but it is richer in a more spiritual way than it would be if you were a doctor. You know, forget the money. The deep insight that you are able to gain from your direction just seems incredible.
That's such a great way of putting it. Thanks for saying that. You know, I feel like every human has this internal mapping system that is able to endure specific types of suffering, and I think every path we walk is going to have some form of suffering, and mm-hmm. I just am not built for the suffering that comes with pre-med and med school and that path.
Yeah.
I'm built for the sufferings of uncertainty and almost like using my life as a gamble. Mm-hmm. Like, my grandfather was really good at roulette, and he also sang, and I feel like his spirit lives very strongly within me, and I am okay with the gamble of life, and it comes with its own prices, you know, like,
yes.
And its own cost. There's times where I'm like, man, this path is really difficult. However, the gifts that I get from it, like you had mentioned, mm-hmm. the spiritual gifts that come from it, the fulfillment of singing a song of my internal survival and then seeing it resonate externally with other people that I haven't ever met or had a conversation with, but knowing we've connected at that soul level, it feels very special. And I joke with my dad that I'm a doctor of the soul.
Oh, I love that.
I was like, I'm not a doctor
right.
in real space and time in the way you wanted, but I think that healer in me is still very active, and I know he's quietly proud of that now. It took a bit of time.
Of course.
And my mother, too. I think they see that I'm not going to step away from this path, so they've kind of given in.
Yeah.
It's been 10 years, so I think they've submitted.
Well, I would imagine that their respect for you has just changed and your relationship has shifted, because, you know, I don't believe there are a lot of mistakes we make in life. I think that building a nonlinear life is the best kind of life to have.
I love that.
You know, because maybe you were encouraged to go from point A to point B, but that wasn't the kind of life that you wanted. And if you think about all the nonlinear directions that you've taken, they've probably opened up some incredible insights and opportunities and meeting people.
I love that idea, too, of just holding that nonlinear philosophy. We're taught to be so linear in this culture, and I can't tell you how many opportunities have come from such unexpected places. Like, who would have thought that an a cappella video of me singing on the streets of D.C. is what would have launched me into the life of my dreams?
Yeah.
I really wasn't doing that to get signed or to get known. I was feeling really lost with what's going on with our country, and I felt like I wanted to be with people, you know, and that was it. It wasn't a linear choice. It was very, again, it's like following my body.
Yes.
And those feelings. And I do feel like it's a skill set.
Yes.
Some people's bodies are less loud, you know, and those are our nonlinear teachers, our bodies.
Oh, yes.
But I've learned to respect whatever it's telling me. And it's guided me in a really beautiful way. And I can't help but feel like it's a parallel to nature. You know, like the flower that blossoms might not have a philosophical knowing that it's blooming, but it's just listening to its body, you know?
So try to
do the same thing.
Do you find that people are communicating differently or not as social? Because I know, for instance, I've seen this and I've heard this, and I even feel like this is sometimes, like being in social situations, sometimes I feel a little awkward at first. I mean, it's a post-pandemic thing.
Totally. I would say it's both, like there's more awkwardness and there's also more accepting behaviors of this awkwardness.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a huge reception to deeper conversations. I'm one of those people who forget that not everybody wants to talk about their family traumas and their, I just like going deep immediately. Yeah. And I have found that it's become more welcome. I've also learned to check myself because I'm like, not everybody wants to go there immediately. And I've had to learn that that's okay. And that's like a big part of why I've healed with my family. Because my family is that they're not wanting to talk about all those things right away. I've had to learn to move at their pace, which helped me write the album Mother Tongue. But to go back to your question, I do feel like there is this, I would say, more comfort with the uncomfortable. Like I'm a little more willing to just show that I feel really awkward in a moment. I'm doing a little less masking, and it's helping me not use so much energy in public,
yes,
if that makes sense.
Well, there's something very healing when you can be authentic. And when I read some of your earlier life and some of the things that you went through, I thought, what a role model. Because it took me years to be able to talk about the trauma that I went through. And I went to a therapist during the pandemic, and it really helped me in my relationships. But also, there's so much shame, and when you stuff something down and you think, I'll never, ever talk about that, the Pandora's box. And then you realize that once you feel free to open up, there's a sense of healing and you can move forward.
You brought up shame and you brought up the healing when we can share our stories. And that's, I feel like I'm building my entire artist journey off of what you just said. Ever since I was a kid and continuing to grow as an adult, I've always wanted to free myself of shame because I feel like it's an illusion. And it really keeps us from doing the work of rebuilding and creating together. I think Shame feels a bit destructive, and it's fine. It's normal. It's natural to feel it.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if our culture knows how to transmute that shame. And I think you just named it. It really is with sharing and telling it to at least one other person, or even to a journal, you know, writing
yes.
it down.
Yes.
Just getting it out of us, out of, I feel like that's where the work can really, and when I say the work of creating new ways of community, creating new ideas that don't pit us against each other, that type of work.
Yes.
That's my goal, is like, if my music can help people feel more ready to do that work, that's the ultimate journey for me. I'm always like very conscious, and I'm learning how to verbalize this, is like my music is for internal healing, and mm-hmm. the internal healing is so that we can do external healing together. Like Yoko Ono says, internal peace begets external peace.
Yes.
And that's the goal. That's the goal. So
I love that.
Yeah.
So we have to wrap up, but I am so thankful for this time, because I only would have probably had like 2 minutes of you on the red carpet as she runs.
Yeah.
And this is so special. So do you have gigs coming up in LA, or is there a website with all your information you could?
Yeah. So I'm really asking people, I send out like handwritten or illustrations and letters on my email list. If people go to milkmusic.com, M-I-L-C-K music.com, there's a newsletter. And on Instagram, I actually just posted a couple of battle cries in response to everything that we're seeing on the news. And a couple of those videos are going viral right now.
Mm-hmm.
And so I invite people to go check them out and just hang with me virtually. And I am doing a fire relief fundraising event it's going to be in a couple Sundays. I'm working with 3 other healers, and we are all meeting on Zoom. It's going to be on the 23rd. So
beautiful.
People are curious about that. We're doing breath work movement, and I'm going to be playing music and guiding people through some journaling.
I love it.
It's a free event, but any donation that's like incurred from that will go to 2 very special fire relief organizations.
Awesome. Well, I want to thank you so much. This was great. That's an understatement. And this will be up as a podcast for all of you listeners. The show blog, getthefunkoutshow.kuci.org. Hope to see you soon. Thank you so much for calling in, Milk.
Thank you so much.
Okay.
Bye.
Up next, SoCal New Waver with Pass Forward. If you missed any part of my conversation with Connie Lim, also known as Milk, the podcast will be up very shortly on the show blog, getthefunkoutshow.kuci.org. I'll be back next week. Have a great week, everyone. You are listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine.